Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us. It's really a pleasure to have you with us here every week. And that every week happens to be Sundays at 7 a.m. and p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We also archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. So if you would like to connect with our guests, we would love for you to do that because we link to their website. As I've said many times before, and I'll probably say many times in the future, we do not reinvent the wheel. The wheel has been invented by our guests. Their websites are where you're going to find the information. So we just direct you straight there. We're sort of a portal with sound, and the sound being the archives of our guests and their interviews. And we're excited to have, as a returning guest to our program, a woman who was basically instrumental, if you will, in sort of putting together, it's a great title for a book having to do with basically making the statement that you're smarter than you think. And we would like to thank Renee Mullen Masters for joining us here on the program. And it is great to have you back all the way. And I like the fact that you are in the Pacific Northwest. I think that that's a great thing, and we are glad to have you with us.
Oh, I'm glad to be here. This is a beautiful morning.
Absolutely is. Absolutely is. And one of the things that I find really interesting is that with the first book that we talked about, you know, we were discussing this whole thing. And, there are still times when I question that whole theory of whether or not we really are. Just because of some of the behavioral aspects some of the ways in which people are processing information, in particularly. But you have a new work out that I'm rather intrigued by. First of all, share with us the title and the basic premise of this new work.
Okay, it's called The Friendship Pod Affair. And it's a story about three people who should never have been friends, who become friends, and they face a trauma that is devastating, and they want to respond to it like everybody else does, with anger and revenge and hate. And they decide, because of a spiritual messenger, they decide to respond in a different way. And the consequences of having that experience and all the twists and turns, and they bring the friendship pod to their countries where they create a peace that nobody ever thought was possible. And the premise of this story came from the idea that we so often focus on the problem instead of the solution. And what this story tries to demonstrate is that if you focus on solution, the problem just magically disappears. You don't have to worry about it.
Well, and of course, I've noticed that in our day and time that that really seems to be the problem. And there are some programs that, you know, I've listened to both nationally as well as locally, as well as even maybe internationally. And I hear a lot of whining going on, you know, and they just moan and groan and complain and all of those things. And if they even offered a solution in the context of what they were talking about, I can't hear it over the whining.
Exactly.
I mean, that's really the truth. And it's extremely frustrating because, to me, it's a perfectly good waste of airtime, whether it be television or radio. By the same token, I also try to challenge some of these folks that I happen to come in contact with and say, you know, the group of people you're complaining about? Do you realize how much you owe them? Because if it weren't for them, you'd have nothing to talk about. You'd have no ratings. et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I just find the unwillingness on the part of some to not just, you know, in a way that's sort of a facetious kind of comment on my part, saying, you know, you owe them, you know, you owe them royalties for what you have. But I also say that in some seriousness, and even challenged one gentleman once, saying, do you realize, have you ever considered the possibility that what you're complaining about, that they did, whoever they are, you share responsibility for the problem because you let it happen? Let's just say it's dealing with, a political issue. Well, you didn't get enough of your people out to vote in the person that you wanted in order for this not to have happened. I also just, and Renee, I just watched a program. It's a six-part, and I'm beginning to, Britain seems to do more of these short series television programs, 4, 8, maybe 12 episodes tops, and that's it. They don't carry it on infinitum. And this particular one was 11/22/63. It was a six-part program having to do with going back in time to try to stop the assassination of JFK. And he succeeds, and then he's able to go back to 2016, and it's utter devastation. Now, I'm not blaming that on Kennedy, but the course of events, which they never actually spelled out in their entirety, ended up 2016, you know, we have just, you know, cities in ruins in the United States and all of these different things. So he ends up going back to the same time, back in November of 63, and not stopping the assassination. And then, of course, the timeline is restored. And I don't know, when I first saw the first episode, I thought, what's the point here? You can't do it. And even if you could, you know, maybe I take things too literally.
Well, I think the issue is that most of us are walking around life with a bag over our head because we don't realize that we have more power and more control than we realize. Mm. And we haven't taken the time to really figure out what's going on here. Now, Eunice Kennedy Shriver in the 60s realized that people with disability were being treated horribly all over the world. She didn't go on TV and bitch and moan and complain about that.
Mm-hmm.
No, what she did is she went and created a sports program called Special Olympics that inspired greatness in these athletes, and those athletes changed people's minds. Oh, these guys can do something. They're not just blobs on the sidewalk. And she changed in 10 years the cultures of over 100 countries. And she did it by not saying one negative thing. And that's the power that we have in our hands. And that's what I'm trying to show in my book, my new book,
mm-hmm.
is that if you focus on the negative, if you focus on the problem, you will never find the solution, ever. You won't.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I'm with you there. Yeah, it's really quite amazing to me that we haven't sort of gotten that. But, you know, it takes time, I guess. You know, that's really kind of the bottom line. It just takes time. And
well, I think we also have a media that knows that if they don't talk about the bad stuff, they're not going to get good ratings. That's already been proven.
If it leads, it bleeds. Or if it bleeds,
yeah,
it leads.
If it bleeds, it reads. Ever, yeah. Whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that people have to start disconnecting from the media. And in order to find, to stay positive.
So this particular work, this new work here, the Friendship Pot Affair, it's obviously it's fiction.
Uh-huh.
But the message that it's bringing forth certainly rings true for a lot of us. And that's part of what this program's about. As you already know, you know, we're here to looking for those new ways of living. And one of them is to discontinue the practice of moaning, groaning, and complaining. And I'm still working on that myself in my own life, you know?
Right.
But I've gotten better. I have to say that one of the areas in particular has to do with finance, you know, and going to the grocery store or going to the gas pump. And one of the things that my wife has, you know, she is constantly saying this to me, and that is when you look at a price of something, the only response should be, and this is what the price is. That's all there is to it. This is just, you know, it's not a judgment. The price, $10.99, that's the price.
It's just an interesting point of
view. Exactly.
It's just an interesting point of view. It doesn't mean doodly.
Yeah. And you don't get drawn into the, yeah, but the oil companies are doing this and that. You know, it's like, come on. Because what does that get you? Does the price change?
No.
And again, I'm guilty of this just as much as anybody else.
It doesn't.
Yeah. You know, and I'll talk about, you know, pricing in general, not so much complaining about the price. But, for example, when we were in Ireland and we went to the grocery store to purchase some items, the prices on the shelves for the items, that was the exact price that you would pay at the checkout, but not in the United States. The price on the shelf is not what you will pay at the checkout stand because tax is not factored into that price. And I'm thinking, wait a minute. You're telling me that Europe can do this, but the United States can't? Why is it that we must be surprised? Well, again, now I'm already getting into the story already. And so it's like, again, the price is what the price is. And you pay at the checkout is what that's just what you pay. Again, just another interesting fact.
Well, if you feel yourself to be an unlimited human being, which we are, we're an unlimited spirit, basically. But if you feel that, I mean, it doesn't even matter if it's true or not. But if you feel that, mm-hmm. when you walk into a store and you feel your abundance, we in this country have so much more than people in other countries in most of the world.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And we feel poor.
Yeah.
And it's like walking into a store and looking at a price and saying, okay, I have the money. I can do this. It's just an interesting perspective.
Yeah. So I can certainly gauge in the general sense where this concept came from. But why don't you enlighten us as to how this really developed for you? Because it seems like an awesome, you know, responsibility, so to speak. And you had to think at the time that you were writing this, though, that, you know, I've got to get this message out. This is such an important message, but I can't just do it in a non-fictional, in-your-face kind of thing. I've got to do it more subtly. How did this concept come about for you?
Well, I volunteered for Special Olympics for 20 years, so I internalized, I saw this and I thought, wow, this is incredible. But I really did want to write a fiction story. And it just happened that a friend of mine happened to do a story on kids that had come to the United States from Israel and Palestine and had gone to camp. And I went online and read the kids' stories and realized that the kids made friends almost instantly at the camps. But when they got home, it like blew up in their face. They couldn't internalize it or integrate it into their lives. And I said, okay, here's the story. And it just sort of has had a life of its own. I wanted to write a story that was inspiring, and I wanted to write a story that was fun to read, and I wanted to write a story that communicated this piece of information. So that's been the motivation behind everything that I did. I just had that in the back, and then I took a ride with these three characters. And that's kind of what happens when I write. I, at one point, thought the story was going to go to the right, and it went up instead. And there were, I get surprised as much as the reader gets surprised when I'm writing, because it just sort of, my creativity just sort of has its way.
And that's kind of the way creativity works, actually. It does. It has its way. You know, you can't fight it. Now, you make available a little snippet, if you will, a short section on your website of the book. And, of course, you reveal in the first chapter here, you have actually 31 pages available. The first character in this first chapter is introduced to us, Sarah Salinger. No, no relation to Pierre, I take it.
No.
and they begin this process. The characters obviously begin the process of, you know, working through and trying to figure out what the next step is and so forth. So in terms of creating the storyline, and I realize we're sort of, I'm trying to dissect, if you will, your process. But I have a feeling that it's sort of important, because there are a lot of people who might be listening who, they have this same idea. They have I'm going to call it an idealistic point of view or idealistic philosophy. And there's nothing wrong with it. There's no judgment there. It's an observation. It's an interesting fact. Okay. But they want to get it out. But again, they also know that it has to be done in such a way that it will get noticed.
Well, that's where editors come in. The book is being published, and the editors are changing it from first person to third person, and they are taking it to a new level, so that it is, they have a marketing eye that maybe, because I'm so close to the material, I can't have. But editors are really important. They're my other half. And so they're now taking it to a new level, so that it is and it will be noticed. And I'm also doing an independent film with this. So hopefully it'll get noticed one way or the other.
Well, of course, they say bad press is still press.
Exactly.
That kind of thing. So in formulating this, in terms of making sure that the essence of the message that you're trying to get across in this particular work, The Friendship Pot Affair, did you struggle at all in terms of the type of events that would happen? Did this all play out in your mind before you actually put it down on paper?
Somewhat, yes. Yes, it did, actually. I got the whole story in a package. But in communicating it, when there's a problem, the problem doesn't solve instantly. It has to be carried through to the very end of its role. And that's where I've had some help, because for me, I want to solve it really quickly, but in drama and in, you know, books and film, people don't like that. They want the problem to go on for a little while. So that's kind of what the process has happened. The story came to me as one whole package. I knew when I got done with that first run, I knew exactly what was going to happen and how it was going to happen. But now we're just adding all the twists and turns and bells and whistles and things that go into good storytelling.
I just happened to come across a particular a passage here. It's interesting because, you know, on this program we don't usually deal with current events. We try to stay away from the minutia, if you will. In terms of, yeah, the oil companies, it's their fault for the gas prices and this and that, blah, 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 blah. But sometimes we have to touch upon them. And so here's a brief little passage, which I find very interesting. At that moment, When the money is about to fall into her hands, in that exact moment, there is a loud explosion that rocks throughout the establishment. The noise from the explosion is so loud and the impact so intense that it knocks me to the floor. I hit my head and lose consciousness for a moment. The smell is acrid and so pungent, it brings me back to semi-consciousness. Now, this is from Sarah, and she has a small infant daughter, Farah, which is I find interesting. And they're in this shop, and she's purchasing a little roll or donut or what have you, and suddenly, boom, an explosion. Now, that rings for most of us as some of the events that have taken place in the last, just in the last year around the world, where, you know, you think you can't go anywhere without being concerned about this being your last moment on Earth.
And this story is about how do you respond to something like that?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, how devastating that can be. What happens if for some unknown reason you happen to meet the father of the bomber? What do you do? What do you do? Do you kill him in revenge? Mm. And what do you do in those moments when you feel such hate? And that's what this story is about. It's looking at how, as a group of human beings that inhabit this earth, we have allowed ourselves the freedom to perpetuate hate versus hate. You hate me, I'm going to hate you. You hate me, I'm going to hate you. You hurt me, I'm going to hurt you.
Mm-hmm. I find it, as I'm watching some of the older television programs, we predominantly have on-demand. And I have to say that I am glad that we switched from cable or satellite to on-demand, because we've seen things we never would have seen otherwise, and in a good way. Mm-hmm. Documentaries that have shared information that we would have never seen. Networks. We actually watch Sky News out of London, England. Mm-hmm. Because it gives us a different perspective on the rest of the world. I remember hearing people complaining about, for example, when we used to carry BBC on this radio station, and they were upset about the fact that they're always talking about Africa and this. Well, gee, what country is closest to them? The European nations and Africa. Mm-hmm. And the former Soviet Union countries and Asia. Why would they not be carrying news from these areas? I mean, seriously. But they also carried news from the United States and Canada and Central and South America and so forth. But it is interesting that we have a new perspective on the world, and we've seen movies that we've never even heard of before that, you know, they even show you the ratings from the critics that maybe it was a panned film. And I'm going, I don't know why they panned. I liked it. And then, of course, I'm thinking, the critics probably would think I'm an idiot, you know, because I liked that particular film. But the messages in some of these older programs that I'm watching are basically what you're talking about. That an event, action and reaction, action and reaction, and it's always reciprocal. Except for a couple of programs, and in particular, I'm watching, of course, the creation of Gene Roddenberry and the Star Trek series, and the myriad of different series that were created, as well as the movies, where the initial response is not always, you know, throw up the shields and heat up the weapons and get ready to fire. It's always, you know, tempered by a cool-headed captain, for the most part. Like, wait a minute, we don't know what's going on. You know, we don't know why they're doing what they're doing. We need to move slowly. We need to find out what the real story is, the whole story, all of the details, and not just the superficial. And, you know, I don't know about you, Renee, but I find myself trying to do that, trying to gather as much information before I jump.
That's one piece of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also, I mean, and I think that's really important because that's what we have done. We have allowed action, reaction. We have allowed that. It's acceptable. If I'm angry and sad and hurt and whatever because somebody has killed my child, we consider it normal. But what my book is trying to say is, wait a minute, if you can say no more, I don't want anybody else to feel this way. That when you say those words, no more, that something magical actually can come in and change your heart so that instead of hating that person, you begin to understand why they did what they did.
Yeah. And I think that is really critical. Matter of fact, I just heard a report on NPR this morning as I was coming in, as we're talking. They were interviewing, and I don't know how they were able to do this, but they were actually able to interview individuals, and this is in other parts of the world, who are joining these radical groups. And they came across these two individuals, and these were teens. Okay, these were teenagers. And one of them supposedly had attempted their own suicide. There wasn't a bomber, but they had reached a point where whatever it was that they ended up finding in this radical group was so horrific as far as maybe what they were asking them to do. They didn't want to live anymore.
Wow.
And we're talking about teenagers here. And then one of the other people they were talking with through a translator was really kind of flippant about the whole thing, as if there was some humor in it and it was not a big deal, you know? I mean, this is just what we do. There are a lot of things I have not been able to wrap my brain around as far as human behavior. That is probably at the top of the list. Because I can't understand why, if you're trying to promote, and again, we're not labeling any specific ideology here or philosophy, but if your philosophy is so important that you think it's necessary for you to not only take out the lives of others, but for you to die in the process, then what's the point of your philosophy? Because you're not around to enjoy it anymore.
But the truth is, we never take the time to really understand what is motivating that person. What is going on in that person's head?
I agree with you.
He's asking for something.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I was putting that question forth back in 2001, following the Trade Center attacks. I said, has anybody stopped to ask them why? Has anybody sat down to try to reason and say, all right, I need to understand your motivations. I don't agree with your methods. But I need to understand your point.
But can I, and can I give you something? What can I give you that is a different alternative than what you are doing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is there something here? And the thing that's crazy, Richard, is that we don't even take one moment. We don't take a breath to even consider this.
No. When that event happened, and it was still actually underway, and I'm watching the television screen, first thought went through my mind when I first turned it on after getting the phone call from the radio station I worked for. I said, wow, look at what Hollywood has created. That was the first thing.
I had the same reaction.
Yeah. And then as it began to unfold and I began to understand a little bit about what was happening based upon what I was being told, and that was what it was based on, the first intuitive response was, there's something not right here. And the conclusions that they were coming to, even within minutes or hours following the event, still, I said, there's something not right here. And it wasn't just that the planes had been driven into two high skyscrapers. It was that what I'm hearing on the television and the radio, as far as the explanation, it doesn't feel right. It just doesn't. So let's step out of the fictional, shall we say. And you've already shared with us some of the aspects of what you're wanting to get across in this work. And I applaud you for the effort, and we'll do what we can in our little corner of the world to, you know, get people to maybe at least pick it up, go to the website, even if it's just to read the first 31 pages, and get that ball rolling. But from where you come from philosophically, especially growing up, this meshes well in that regard for you? Or is it contrary in some fashion to how you were raised?
I think that's a really interesting question. I mean, there were a lot of there was a lot of craziness when I was growing up, but I have to say that I was really raised in a home that, in spite of all the craziness, there was revenge and hatred was not something that was taught, that was thought about. And that's really interesting for me to say that, but it's true. There was a goodness that went through, even though there was all this craziness, underneath it, there was a goodness. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's, I don't know how I got where I am today. I don't know. But I feel inspired by life, mm-hmm. and the mystery of life. And I want to inspire others. I want them to get on the train with me.
Yeah.
Because we can have amazing things happening here just with a little shift.
Mm-hmm.
And how I got that, I don't know. I couldn't tell you. And I have to say, my childhood was not idyllic. It was horrible. I shouldn't say horrible. It was chaotic. It wasn't a place that nurtured at all. It just wasn't. Mm-hmm. My parents were doing the best they could do with the tools that they had. And that wasn't very much.
I remember back in the 80s and 90s, going through personal growth programs and the psychology that was being promoted during that 20-year period, where in the 80s it was your parents' fault. You know, whatever you're going through, you know, it was mom and dad or the siblings or the bully at school and so on and so forth. In the 90s, we started to take more responsibility for who and what we are. And I used to say the same thing even in the 80s. Well, wait a minute. I mean, my folks didn't grow up with these programs that I'm going through to understand themselves necessarily better. So I agree with you. They did the best that they could with what they had at the time.
Everybody always is. That's the crazy thing.
Yeah.
Is that each of us are always doing the very best that we can do.
Yeah.
We need to let people off the hook.
Exactly, including ourselves. And that'll be a subject that we'll continue talking about here on the program as we continue talking about the Friendship Pot Affair and Renee Mullen Masters here on AM 1290 and the Tell Me Your Story radio program. It's New Paradigms for a New World and trying to give you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Stay tuned. We have more to come.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. I'm joined by Renee Mullen Masters. She's the author of not only the Friendship Pot Affair, but also You're Smarter Than You Think. It's sort of a textbook, workbook kind of fun thing to take a look at. And I have to say that, Renee, I've probably been educated better since I left Institutional education. I've even thought about this, and this goes back to that whole thing of it's no longer an observation, it's now a judgment. But I've often thought, gee, I wonder if I could go back because of my inferior upbringing or education. I wonder if I could go back and sue the grade school and high school for malpractice like you can with a doctor, you know? Mm-hmm. But that aside, that process taught me a lot. I mean, there are things that I still remember as far as English. And some of the stuff that I run into on a day-to-day basis in my career, in my vocation, that absolutely astound me from people. And we kind of talked about this in our last interview, that astound me from people who come across as being really well-educated. And I'm going, wait a minute. No, that's incorrect. But at the same time, I'm also learning. I remember handing the book that I'm working on to my one of my elder sisters, who has a degree in English and so forth. And when I received the text back from her, there were changes in the lists of things. She took all my commas out and put in the word and. So I went through that and I'm thinking, wait a minute, I was taught in school that you take ands out where they aren't needed in a list and you put commas except for the last two. That's where you would put and four. Then I did some research and I found out she wasn't wrong, that both ways are acceptable English. So, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, you go back and you, before you jump on somebody's case about something, and the last thing I wanted to do is, you know, put any kind of obstacles or barriers or what have you between myself and my siblings. I checked it out first, and it turns out, no, she was right, too. So again, that's as you say, that's half the story. Then the other half, especially when we're talking about the Friendship Pot Affair, which is the new work that you have out, we're also looking at trying to understand where the other person is coming from. And it doesn't have to be huge things. I had a couple of instances a few days ago of near hits, not near misses, near hits. People transpose those, but they think it's correct. An airplane nearly hit a drone or vice versa, as opposed to, you know, it was a near miss, but they nearly hit it or vice, you know. And this one individual made a maneuver and I almost hit them. And, you know, I did honk the horn to kind of wake them up a little bit. And then they went and they drove off and that was fine. There was no accident. We never made contact. But I have to wonder, well, what were they doing? And maybe not so much what were they doing, but what were they thinking that they could make this particular maneuver? Or were they distracted by some other event? Maybe the child at home is ill, or the spouse, or maybe they just lost their job, or some other type of event happened in their lives just moments or hours earlier or the day before. And they're distracted, you know, and it doesn't.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And it doesn't excuse what, you know, what nearly happened or what could have happened in that respect. But rather than throwing the car in park and swinging the door open and get out and then banging on the car saying, what do you think you're doing? You know, all of that kind of because the energy could be better utilized. Trying to understand. Mm-hmm. Trying to make peace, trying to connect. Mm-hmm. What is your perspective on our connectedness?
I think that connectedness is the most important thing that we can do. I talk about it in the book, in the Friendship Pot Affair. It's about having this moment to actually see that this person across from me that I have hated, just for a moment, let's drop the story and let's just see who this person really is and you realize, oh my gosh, I connect. It's like what I heard from the kids when they went to the camps in the United States, the Israeli and Palestinian kids. They dropped the story of hate, the story of, you know, you're different than I am, blah, 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 through the process of the camp. And these kids were saying, wow, people told me that I didn't have anything in common with you, and we haven't shut up in 3 weeks. And it's because they connected as human beings. It's like if a cop is faced with a bad guy, a black man, and a cop is standing in front of him. They're both scared. But if they could just connect and drop the guns, something magical could happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I found it interesting. I just have, again, I'm watching all of these different old, I suppose by my perspective, they are old programs. But I was watching one in particular, and the dialogue was, are you kidding? You're wanting to understand where this group of individuals is coming from? Don't you understand that they don't care? All their, you know, their motivations aren't even close to what you're thinking they are. And you think that you're going to go in there and you're going to reason with them. But when we're talking here about reasoning, we're talking about trying to reason with other human beings. And granted, there is a language barrier, but there are translators. There is the capability for each one of us to learn another language. I know of this foreign exchange student from Italy who is here in Santa Barbara studying. The girl speaks 5 languages. It's just what she learned to do in school. And that's kind of where I go back to my education and going, you know, it really would be nice to be able to speak at least one other language and then be able to understand what other people are saying and communicate in that fashion.
And I think that I went to a fundraising event in Berkeley a few months ago with Combatants for Peace from Israel and Palestine. And I got to talking to these people, these young people. And the thing that they said to me is that if you can drop the story, if the story can be set aside, and it doesn't have to do with reasoning with the person, it has to do with connecting. It's not about, I don't want to change you. I want to understand you. Mm-hmm. I truly want to hear what you have to say. I want to receive you. And we don't receive people. And in the moment of receiving another person, and you allow them to be who they think they are, that's when there's an energy of, I call it love, others call it other things, but I think that when that energy comes in, that's when something wonderful can happen. And this is not fantasy land. This is truth. I have seen this happen. It actually can happen.
You know, I met a woman who is involved in trying to resolve conflicts in a specific African country whose name escapes me, both the woman as well as the country. But she has focused, and her organization has focused their attentions specifically on this area. I almost want to say Mozambique, but I don't think that's right. Nonetheless, because it's one of the areas where there is the worst atrocities that are being perpetrated, and more people are being killed and so forth in this part of the world than any other. And so the question I asked her, I says, well, where do you start? I mean, do you look for common ground, or, you know, what do you do? And I know that there are all kinds of different techniques that people come up with. But I remember, again, going back to one of these old programs where with this one individual was one of these mediators. But he had an entourage, that he became separated from. And without that entourage, he could not communicate. It was kind of like a translator, if you will. So the best way he thought to help the two combatants to sit down and communicate with him and with each other was to go into these meetings with the three of them having to learn how to communicate together, to come up with a common language that they could use to resolve their differences, so that if they could learn how to communicate with him and with each other, then there's the first biggest hurdle. And if they can do that, then they could actually do just about anything.
Mm-hmm. And that all it is connection.
Yeah.
It's like if you're in a fight with someone, okay, and you're yelling at each other, if one person can say, okay, wait a minute, I really want to understand your perspective on this. I really do. I want to understand what you're saying to me. It's like magic. Because when the person can share their perspective, it opens the way for solution to appear.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're in conflict, fighting each other, there's no way for solution to appear. It just can't. There's no space or energy for that to happen.
We there's no question. We need to come to some type of better understanding in that regard of one another. I used to think as a kid growing up, when I would hear about all of these different, you know, conflicts going on, that, well, wouldn't it just be simpler in terms of trying to show the connection if each side was to take a little blade and, you know, cut into the palm of their hand and see, look, same red blood as you have, so we're the same, you know. And the truth is that we are. I mean, from that standpoint, and I do find it fascinating that most of the time, for religious reasons, we're fighting. You know, my God is bigger and badder and better than your God, and my religion is bigger and better and more important than yours is, and my sacred writings are the true sacred writings of that bigger and badder and better God. It always seems to be that's what it comes down to, and you know, and some might argue too that, well, you know, also over power and also over resources, but those issues really stem from the philosophical perspective of that particular group of people that makes those other elements important. And I don't know how accurate some of these television programs are that go back in time. For example, some of these medieval programs they're talking about the rise, if you will, of the British Empire in the 1600s. But it's again, this is one of those things I can't wrap my brain around, and that is why would I want to control another group of people? I mean, you know, I got enough problems controlling myself. Tell me about describe for me, if you would, the friendship pod. What is that?
Okay. The friendship pod is based on an idea that is true, and it's talked about in the Zim Zoom of Relationship.
Oh, Zim Zoom?
Uh-huh.
Tell me what that is.
It's a fabulous book.
Okay.
It's a fabulous book. If you're in a relationship, you should read that book.
Okay.
It's really great. And it's based on the idea that if you have an enemy, and if you're willing to sit down with your enemy, and you're willing to let him have his say, where he says everything that he feels, everything, as long as he's not being mean, he has to not be mean. but he says everything that he feels about his particular situation. And then when it's nobody can comment on it, and then you say everything that you feel, and then you let it go. And then you do something crazy like play a silly, fun game, which takes you away from what you just said. That what happens in that moment of sharing is exactly what I talked about. There is an energy that comes in. There is a positive energy force that exists in our world and is available to each of us. And it will come in and it will soften one's position and bring them closer to truth. And people who have participated in these kinds of things report that, oh, I don't hate that guy as much as I did. I don't even think I want to kill him. Whereas when I came into the meeting, I wanted to kill this person. I was going to use another word.
I was going to say, you cleaned that up real quickly there. Thank you.
I cleaned it up good. But it's not, this is truth. This is not airy-fairy. Anybody that's in a relationship, and if you're having a fight, just say to them, look, let's stop this. I want to hear your perspective and then have them tell you you take turns and you don't try and fix the problem. And you just listen to one another and solution will occur. Kierkegaard, my husband used to always refer to this. And I think it's so great. Kierkegaard says, look, if you need me to change, the fact that you need me to change, it sets up some kind of an energy field that keeps me from being able to change.
Ooh. Now, that also opens up for me the old saying that I was taught as a kid growing up that I have recently found out is false, that you can't change other people. But this goes to what you just said. And that is that if I can't change someone else, and as you quoted Kierkegaard, because if you want me to change, then it prohibits me from doing so. But the fact is we do change other people by changing ourselves.
Bingo. That's it. You let people off the hook.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very interesting. Very interesting. You know, the whole process of, I mean, we could go in so many different directions. I know that this whole concept would also apply in terms of going through mediation for whatever reason. Whether it be relationships or business or, you know, again, whatever the issue might be. But we could do this on our own, and meaning, you know, two by two, so to speak, if there are two people who have any kind of conflict.
I got to tell you a story.
Please.
There is somebody that's in my life, and I don't want to get specific because I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. But there was somebody in my life, as I was writing this story, I realized that I had a Palestinian-Israeli conflict in my life. And this person, for a long time, like 30 years, I have judged this person. I have made her wrong because she was different. I've separated in a way from her, even though she was in my life. And I thought, oh my word, that is nuts. Just because she's a little different than I am. So about a year ago, I made a decision. It was just a flat out decision. I just said, okay, I'm not doing this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I'm done separating from her. I'm done. So the first day I was with her, she did something that pushed my buttons. And I realized in that moment that I had to stop my normal reaction. And what I realized is that she was touching into something inside of me that I needed to clean up. So I did that. I did my homework. The second time that I was with her, it happened again, but it was less powerful. So I continued to do my homework. Then I had an opportunity to spend a whole day with this person. And I have to tell you, I had a delightful time, and I actually found that I cared about her, that I actually had affection for her. And it happened not due to any earth-shattering reason. It happened because I made the decision. I am not going to do this anymore. I'm not going to separate from her because she's different than I am. That's crazy. And what I discovered is that she can be different. I can be over here and she can be over there. We can connect and we can care about each other and have a wonderful time together.
Yeah, I can actually relate to that as well, because I had an experience very recently where I was going over some documents some months ago. I mean, you know, when they were first sent to me, and I read them through and I'm going, oh, okay, I have no problem with that. That's fine. And it wasn't anything I had to sign. These were just being presented to me as information. And then a few days ago, I started thinking about them. And I thought, that's strange that I would be left out of that particular part of it. You know, I need to call this person. I need to get clarification. And then I thought, you know, actually what I need to do is I need to find that document. I need to find the document again and reread it before I make any phone calls, because I was going to call three or four other people too to say, you know, you got the same document that I did. How come I was left out? Well, I found the document and I reread it. Found out I wasn't left out.
Wow.
So I did my research before I created any waves of any kind in that process. But honestly, that is what we need to do, is we need to metaphorically reread the document before we make any phone calls.
We have to get, we have to stop. We have to let people off the hook.
All right, now that's a good place to go now. You say let people off the hook. We're people too. How do we go about letting ourselves off the hook?
It begins there. It you know, Dr. Spock, he was trying to help parents, but he made a mistake. And he said that if you teach your child to love themselves, they will become egomaniacs. That is not correct. The first step to loving anybody is you've got to love yourself first. And if you don't love yourself, there's no way you can love somebody else. And it's the first step. And a lot of kids today have been told by their parents that they're special, that they have this, that, and the next thing. But the problem with that is that it has to come from you. And these kids haven't taken the time to love themselves. And in fact, they have very poor self-esteem, even though they have been built up by their parents. Because it has to come from you. You have to begin to appreciate who you are and what you are. And that's where that it creates a huge shift. If you let yourself off the hook, you're going to start letting other people off the hook. And the world will work a whole lot better.
Indeed, you're. I think you're right about that. It does seem to me that there are people in positions of power, and it's sort of new for them, and they are trying. I know that there are people who want to get involved in government, for example, in particular. And it seems like every time somebody does that, if they're there for too long, then they start to change and become part of the very problem they went there to solve. That's why I've often looked at that and said, well, wait a minute, it was never meant to be a full-time job. This the way the founding fathers set it up, this was supposed to be service to the people. Mm-hmm. You are now my servant. Mm-hmm. Do my bidding, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And not, here's this great job for you. And I always found the irony of applying for the job cost more than the job paid.
Yeah.
I always found that strange. But there are people who are trying to get involved in that way, who have these similar philosophical perspectives. They want a different world than what we have today. They want a better world, and not just for a few, but for everybody. Mm-hmm. How does one who chooses to get involved, to participate, and not just in the politics, but in all of the other realms of existence here in this world, in terms of making change, whether it's in the institutions and so, or maybe your place of employment or what have you, what are your suggestions as to some of the ways in which we can stay steadfast to our principles, but at the same time maintaining a certain element of flexibility, not in violation of our integrity, mind you, but of flexibility in terms of resolving some of these challenges or dealing with some of these challenges that we face today?
I really believe, and because I was a part of the problem, I really believe that everybody has a job to do. And most of us are not doing it. And it's not necessarily about fixing the world. It's about not knowing if what you're doing is going to fix the world. But know that you are doing this. This is what you are supposed to be doing. The reason I wrote The Friendship Pot Affair is that I had an experience that this is what I'm supposed to be doing. This is my part in the job that's happening here. And I think a lot of people have given up. They're uninspired, and I want to inspire them. They've given up, and they don't think that they can make a difference. And you probably can't make a difference in terms of changing the whole world. But if you do your job, you just don't know what difference you're making. And it doesn't matter, because if all of us stepped up to the plate and began doing what we're supposed to be doing, we would start seeing the changes that we want to see. It's not about one person doing something that's going to make the huge difference. Mm-hmm. It's about touching a whole bunch of different people. And then those people touch other people. And then those people touch other people. And it's all of us working together in our own little way. It's like when I walk into the grocery store, instead of ignoring the checker, I talk to them and say, thank you for doing this today. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate what you're doing.
Yeah.
It makes a difference.
Absolutely. It really does. It makes a big difference. And if you think about it from your perspective as the individual who is on the receiving end of that or the opposite, you know how that feels on both instances. Because we have it happen to us, not as often as we'd like maybe, but we've had it happen to us.
And everything is energy.
Yeah.
And if we can just raise the energy of what is going on here, mm-hmm. person by person, miracles can happen.
Absolutely. InspirologyTales.com is the website. When there are, when we are inspired, dormant forces come alive. The book is entitled The Friendship Pot Affair. Okay, before we wrap up, I need to ask you about the film, A Modern Day Forgiveness Story, coming soon to a theater near you.
Yay!
Tell me about this.
Yeah. Say again.
I said, tell me about this. This is exciting.
Well, I'm about doing what I've always wanted to do, and I've always wanted to do a film. And I found out that I could write a story, a good story. And so I am doing an independent film. Independent films are a big thing. The film that won the Best Picture this year was an independent film. And so I'm on my way. This is what we're doing. I'm surrounding myself with very good people, and it's happening. So The Friendship Pot Affair will be a book coming out this summer, and the film will be coming out in probably 2 years. It'll be probably 2 years before it's actually seen.
Hmm. I'm very excited about that. That is really, really neat. When you can create something. And I have to say that when I read books, and I used to listen to Audible books, but it was through blind services in Phoenix, talking books and recordings for the blind, where I also got a lot of my textbooks when I was growing up. And I loved listening. And when I would listen, the movie would be playing out in my mind. And I remember listening to the Audible book of, I think it's Dan Brown and the Da Vinci Code. Mm-hmm. And the movie was playing out in my mind. And this was way before I was even aware that the movie was being made. Mm-hmm. When I saw the movie, it blew me away as to how accurate they were to my version of the film. Now, I didn't cast Tom Hanks, mind you, but he looked like the character, the main character in my movie.
Wow.
Now that blew me away. And it was actually fun to watch, you know, and of course it had been a while since I had read the book, so watching the movie, it was fun to revisit that story and the concepts that they were promoting in the book, that he was promoting in the book and so forth. And same thing with Angels and Demons, I think it was. Same thing there. As we're reading the book, audible book, the same kind of thing was happening. The movie was playing out in my own head, and I'm not sure if there's a movie out on that one yet, but if there is, I bet you it's fairly close. Mm-hmm. So I'm real excited for you in this process, because you have both the print version and now the print version made into a film. I think it's very cool. Look forward to seeing it one day too.
Okay. Well, and that's one of the wonderful things about the newsletter blog, is that I'm sharing the journey that I'm taking with not only the book, but also with the film. Mm. And, it's an amazing journey. It's like taking a trip to the moon.
Oh yeah.
It's so exciting. And I just keep putting one foot in front of the other. And it's just like it's opening up to me. So, and I hope it can inspire others to do the same thing.
Well, I'm excited for you. And I'm excited to see the film when it is released. We'll certainly touch base because I think that'll be a very exciting thing to talk about. Again, the website is inspirologytales.com. When we are inspired, dormant forces come alive. The title of the book and film, The Friendship Pot Affair. Renee Mullen Masters has been my guest, and I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program. And as always, even though you're up there in the north northwestern part of the country, almost due north of us, should you ever find yourself down here in the Santa Barbara area, we'd love to continue this conversation in studio.
Great. This has been wonderful. Thank you so much for having me.
The Friendship Pot Affair, again, is the title of the book and the movie, and it is a modern-day forgiveness story. We encourage you to check it out and go to the website, inspirologytales.com, and that is inspirologytales.com. We will be linked to her website as well. Check out her blog. Follow along in the process she's going through. I think it'll be very exciting for you. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story. New paradigms for a new world. We're giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.